know him, you love him. One of the first guests on this show who isn't a blood relative, Nick DaCosta Clipper. Like to welcome onto the show from Boston.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Nick DaCosta Clipper. Nick DaCosta Clipper, welcome on, buddy.
Hey, thanks.
So wanted to have you on to go over some of the NBA stuff. We've been real Bruins heavy this postseason, mostly pouting about the Celtics, but Devin really touched on the rest of the league. So I want to buzz through kind of the first round here, touch a little bit on the second round, specifically yesterday being one of the best days in NBA history in recent memory, probably since Al Horford hit that game-winning shot on Super Bowl Sunday last year. So that was a great day. Two game sevens after I was talking to you the other night saying that this had been a down postseason for the NBA. They really made up for it the other night. And so let's get right into it here. What was your take on yesterday, Nick?
Yesterday, the one thing that could probably get me to stop watching Game of Thrones was the end of that Sixers-Raptors game. I mean, if we just want to start we got to start at like the end almost there, because that was probably, I don't know, the most dramatic series-ending buzzer beater I think I can remember. I don't know. I'm not sure if there's other. Maybe there might be ones that are more high stakes that weren't in the second round, but. For Toronto, a fan base that's been just so, like, every year, the last, 5 years has just been demoralized by LeBron, and to have their season ride on a what wasn't really a very good shot. I mean, you had Kawhi running around the arc and Embiid contesting it, and a shot that just bounces four times on the rim, and just watching that whole crowd just wait for it, and then as the ball goes through the hoop, explode, that was one of the wildest endings I think I've ever seen.
I know, it kind of defies science, because the second it hit the rim, I was like, well, I thought Kawhi would have put up a better shot than that. And then even after the third bounce, I was like, there's no way this thing is going in. It's just going to be one of those classic, I guess we're going to overtime shots. And we were absolutely shocked. We were yelling in the apartment over a game that we couldn't have cared less about until that very moment. I thought that the Raptors were going to pull it out one way or another, whether it was in regulation or in overtime. I'm glad it finished the way it did, because that was apparently the first, you know, buzzer beater game winner in a game seven before, which I didn't know. I thought there were plenty of those.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so that was crazy. So in terms of high stakes, you know, it's up there with some of the best.
Yeah. It was one of those shots, too, like when you said it was bouncing on the rim. Like, sometimes when you're watching on TV, because of the angle, you'll see a shot hit the rim, and it'll go up, and it looks like it's maybe going to fall, like, come back through the hoop, but, like, it bounces nowhere near the basket, and it's just kind of because of the angle. And that was one where, it did the same thing. And for a second, I was like, are my eyes tricking me, or is that going to come down kind of over the cylinder still? And then when it did, it was crazy.
Yeah, and with the crowd being essentially silent the entire time while that thing was up in the air.
Motionless watching it.
And so we started off with the haymaker, and it kind of overshadows another good series with what the Nuggets and the Trailblazers had in terms of, I didn't think that series was going to be much. I loved what the Blazers did to Oklahoma City in the first round, took care of them, had a nice buzzer beater there with Lillard. Yeah. This was really a coming out party for C.J. McCollum. I thought C.J. McCollum went to like some big school like Villanova. Did not know he was, from Lehigh. That absolutely shocked
Patriot
me.
Patriot League.
Yeah, Patriot League guy. Guy's an absolute stud. Great game seven from him. Great series from those two at the top in Lillard and McCollum. I'm glad they're moving on. I kind of like that series to come, Nick.
Yeah, I feel like that'll be a little bit more fun then. I mean, as much as I like Jokic, and I still don't think everyone's seen enough of Jokic, Nikola Jokic, on like the national stage. I think it would have been a cool coming out party for him. I feel like it'll be more fun to watch Steph and Damian Lillard sort of trade like 30-foot three-pointers, because those are two of the most streakiest shooters in the league, really. Like, they, when those players, when Lillard and Curry get hot and go back and forth, I don't know, you can see a lot of heat checks there. And yeah, it was kind of crazy to see, I mean, and again, another game seven, which is really, was kind of remarkable to have on the same day. But in the beginning, if you told me that, I think Lillard ended that game with 13 points in a game seven away. If you told me that beforehand, I would have figured that the Blazers would be done. But
oh my God, I didn't even realize that. Yeah, absolutely.
He had a terrible game. Yeah, his first half was, I mean, I think he recovered a little bit in the second half, but his first half was, I forget what the stats are. They're not good.
You could say Evan Turner was more important to them yesterday, which sounds absolutely nuts. So, Nick, let's just kind of buzz through the first round here. There wasn't, you know, too much that I was excited about in that first round. We'll just kind of go, you know, east to west here. Bucks, Pistons. I thought that series sucked.
Yeah, boring sweep. I don't know. There was nothing. The Bucks weren't even challenging it. Blake Griffin was injured the entire time, so there wasn't really, I don't know. There was never really a series.
Yeah, nothing there. Warriors, Clippers, I like that series. It was a 6-game series that felt like a 7.
Yeah, and I mean, the Clippers are feisty, and I mean, it'll be interesting what they do this offseason. They could be, if they add a player, which I think they're trying to. Maybe the guy who hit the shot in Toronto yesterday. They could be something next year.
Yeah, definitely. Raptors Magic, great game one. Rest of the series was an absolute rout.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I think, what we were expecting. Weird that the Raptors won that first one, but I feel like that's something that Toronto has to always do, is get some loss in there and scare their fans.
Definitely. Nuggets, Spurs, boring 7-game series as far as 7-game series go.
Yeah, not a fan of watching this Spurs team. Not a DeMar DeRozan fan. I don't know. That was – Jokic put up some cool numbers, I guess. But besides that, yeah.
Yeah, not too much. Sixers, Nets, same thing as Magic Raptors. Great game one. Rest of the series sucked.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing. I thought the Nets would put up a little bit more of a fight, but they're kind of a fun young team. They could be, future seasons, I think they could be something.
I'd love to see what they do in free agency, too, because I thought they were going to do more because they were hot going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then Blazers-Thunder, that series had some great games, but the Blazers just took complete control of that series.
Yeah, it was weird. It was, I think, a fairly close series, but with the Blazers kind of finishing out in the end. And then obviously with that incredible Lillard shot where you're watching it and I think he had the ball with like less than 10 seconds left and he's just dribbling it down and you're like, is he just gonna pull up and shoot it from 35 feet? And yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the best games. I'd say top 4 or 5 of the postseason so far.
Yeah.
Rockets, Jazz, I thought that series was totally underwhelming because the way the Jazz played in last year with Mitchell and that being his coming out party as a rookie, I was like, they're definitely going to give the Rockets a good show here, and that series sucked.
Yeah, the Jazz just didn't seem like they could score without Mitchell. Mitchell's a good player. He hasn't really – his efficiency wasn't great in that series, and they tried to play this weird – defense on Harden where they deny him the middle of the court, and which other teams have tried to do and see a little bit more success, but they kind of ended up just giving Harden the lane, and then their defense just fell apart from there.
Definitely. And our lead-in series right here, Celtics-Pacers, there was a good game too, but games 1, 3, and 4 were just Celtics, you know, took complete control at some point in the game and just turned them into routes. And I think it hurt them, to be honest, going in to playing the Bucks, because the Bucks kind of got to skate by with the Pistons and weren't quite ready for the Celtics in game one. But after they made that game one correction, they absolutely stomped you. As much as it hurt not having a healthy Marcus Smart in this series, I don't think that you playing the B team Pacers did you any favors in terms of preparing you for a run against, you know, one of the top two teams in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, no. It was kind of a shame that we didn't get to see Oladipo in that series, because that could have been at least a little bit more challenging. I still think the Celtics would have won that, but
like in six.
That's like a very, like, it would have been a more hard-fought series.
Definitely. And, you know, what was your take on the Bucks, that series, in the second round?
On the Bucks-Celtics series?
Yeah.
So I, going into it, thought, especially after watching that Pacers series, I honestly would have, I was predicting, and as someone who I just feel like, after watching these Celtics teams kind of come together in the playoffs, I thought they were going to, I was predicting like a 6-game win for the Celtics. Celtics in 6 would have been my guess. Especially after the game one, it kind of seemed like that was, seemed like we were kind of like on target for that. But yeah, I mean, the Bucks made some adjustments. They started switching on defense, which I guess is something that they hadn't really done during the regular season. But they made some adjustments, and I mean, some of the role players just really stepped up. Like, if you told me that George Hill and like Pat Connaughton were going to be like the kind of the, maybe not the difference makers isn't the word, because they played like that well, but I mean, the Celtics, they for the most part seemed to be able to get in front of Giannis a lot of the time, but those role players kind of stepped up for the Bucks.
It was very similar to last year's Game 7 when Jeff Green was looking like the all-star that we thought we had signed in 2000, you know, drafted in 2007. That was so frustrating in Game 7 last year, and then we just repeated it with George Hill and Pat Connaughton in this series. After last year, when George Hill got to play with LeBron and didn't do anything to what he did here. Last year, when George Hill got the ball, we were celebrating because he was averaging like 2 to 4 points a game, and he made us look absolutely foolish. If we had had one of our players, our second best players play like George Hill, we would have put up a good fight in that series.
Yes, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think if the Celtics even had someone who, like, but they, yeah, like you said, they just had no one do that. It looked like a team that didn't have much, the chemistry that they had in past years. It was puzzling to watch. I don't know. It's still kind of, it was very surreal to even take in.
I know, unbelievable stuff, and I'm sure we'll complain about this this series in the next segment when we have everyone on. And so, kind of transition here, a little bit more on the second round. Warriors-Rockets, to me, was just kind of a tired series. It was a matchup we had seen before. I didn't think the Rockets were going to quite have it. They had a little bit of a chance there in Game 6, but that series didn't do much for me. It was kind of a predictable Warriors series win.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I disagree a little bit on there. I thought it was interesting. I mean, the Warriors took the first two games, and it seemed like they were going to have it then. Then when the Rockets kind of came back and took both games in Houston, it seemed like we had a series. It seems like the Rockets, their Morey ball was working pretty well. As much as they played a very good heel with how much they complain about calls and how much their style of play is kind of aesthetically not the most appealing. And then when Durant got injured in Game 5, it seemed like if the Rockets could have made a push there and taken Game 5 in Golden State, I mean, I don't know. It seemed like there was a moment there where it seemed like the series could have flipped. But I think it was interesting to see the Warriors challenged without Durant, without Cousins, who I think might be able to come back later in the playoffs, depending how long they go. I could be wrong on that. I thought I heard something about that, but to see them kind of like push back to sort of the core Warriors, even when you look at Game 6, they started Andrew Bogut, like, or the whatever is left of them, and it was kind of interesting seeing that 2015 Warriors team kind of be forced to I don't know, defend themselves, I guess, against a without having their best player, arguably.
Yeah, I guess the reason I say predictable is because, like, how else do you beat this team over the last, you know, 4 years other than having one of their top players get suspended in the finals? That seems like the only formula for beating these guys in the playoffs. So anything other than, like, going up, you know, 2-0, 3-1 against the Warriors is just like, well, this series is over.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost like the fact that they got pushed a little bit, I feel like, almost has turned them on now more. It'll be interesting to see how they do against the Blazers, because I could see that. I feel like there's like a 50% chance that series is just like a straight sweep.
See, what I need out of the Blazers, I need them to lose Game 1 close and win Game 2 and kind of punch the Warriors in the mouth, because I think what happened to the Celtics in the Bucks is the Celtics won Game 1 and they were all high on their horse, and then the Bucks just got it together and just steamrolled it. I could see the same thing happen if the Trailblazers somehow win Game 1 and the Warriors have that correction and just figure things out and just slaughter them. And so
need some momentum going into the home court, right? Like, you win Game 2 away, and then you could head back to Portland and maybe have like the momentum on your side.
Yeah, definitely. And I like this series a lot. I could see it being the last best series. I'm a little cynical there because the Bucks and the Raptors, they just don't quite do it for me in terms of, you know, Giannis or Kawhi would have to take the Warriors or whoever ends up there to 7 and have some close games, because what my biggest complaint about the NBA, and I was saying to you the other night, Nick, was just these 25 point wins, and there's been
no one wants to watch that.
Of them, and so if it's just a series of that and it just, you know, like a five game example of what the Celtics did. There was no close game, no close fourth quarter. I can't have that in the finals. Whoever comes out of the East, as long as it's competitive, I'll take it. But neither team really does it for me on the Eastern side.
Yeah, I mean the Bucks, when you look at their analytics and stuff from the season, are like historically like a, or just like really stood out as a team. But I don't know. I believe they split the series with the Warriors in the season series, the home and away. And I think I know watching the Bucks in the past, like they were the team that like a few years ago broke that crazy winning streak that the Warriors had. Because they just, the thing that they do have is length defensively, and they've caused some problems. They're kind of, you know, in the way that the Celtics have sort of been able to stifle the Warriors' offense when they've played.
Yep.
I think the Bucks are very similar to that because they have defense that can switch. They have a lot of length for even at like the guard positions, and they have a lot of athleticism. And I don't know, the Warriors, if they have a weakness, it is the rebounding. And if you have Giannis down low, and as Brook Lopez isn't much of a rebounder, but if you have just some, I don't know, if the Bucks can dominate inside, which is sort of what Giannis does, I'd be interested because if they can at least stop a little bit the Warriors shooting. But I don't know, that's, whoever comes out of there will be interesting because you'll have Giannis or Kawhi guarding Durant, and then I think it kind of, the Warriors have so many weapons though that you can't really rely on just being able to shut down one player. So you'd have to have a lot of things, I think, work out for whoever comes out of the East.
Yeah, definitely. I think my weird matchup that I'm thinking here is I could see the Blazers winning in seven, which means they'll probably get swept. And then I could see the Raptors coming out of the East, just because if you look at the Final Four we have right now, imagine going back 10, 15 years and saying, yeah, the Warriors, Bucks, yeah, Raptors, and Trailblazers are all going to be in the Final Four in 2019. You'd be like, how is that even possible?
And Raptors, as good as the Raptors have been, they've always just kind of faltered in the playoffs. And, it's really interesting, actually, if you look at this Final Four is not your traditional NBA powerhouses.
Yeah, so I think I got the Raptors winning. I got Blazers, Raptors. I'm going to take like a real March Madness approach to that. And who do you have coming out of the East, West, and winning it all?
I think I have the exact opposite, which is probably what the NBA front office is rooting for. So Warriors, Bucks, and I think I have Warriors winning, and then Durant goes and joins the Knicks or something.
Yeah, and I guess we can close it out there. You see Durant going to the Knicks? Do you see someone like Kyrie going to the Knicks to follow him?
I guess, there's reports, I don't know, it's so hard to predict with Kyrie. He seems, he's flipped back and forth, like, twice already this season. The way that he left, though, like, that, I don't know, I don't think Boston's going to be, he'd have to do something incredible to kind of convince Boston fans to sort of bring him back, because the media and the fans are at him right now just seem to be so down on him. I don't know.
Yeah,
I like to think that he could come and go and join like the Lakers or something, but it would be very interesting especially if the Knicks get a good draft position on Tuesday, if they can draft like a Zion or a Ja Morant and then pair them up with KD and or Kyrie Irving, that's a super team in the making, right? Like, that'd be fun.
Oh yeah, I would love to see the Knicks be good, but for some reason I see Kyrie staying with the Celtics just because of like the weird contrarian person that he is. He's going to do something odd, and I think
right, like maybe he wants to prove fans wrong now. Like maybe
I think so,
he takes
sure
all this as fuel, and he wants to come back and prove everyone that they are. I don't know. Maybe it lights a fire for the Celtics. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, definitely. And so wrapping things up here, Nick, you've got kind of a weird sports background in terms of who you root for. I know, you know, you're coming on to a Homer podcast that only talks about Boston teams. Why don't you give the fans kind of your, you know, major four sports teams that you root for?
My major four sports. Okay, so Red Sox and Bruins for baseball and hockey to ingratiate myself to your listeners, and then for the NFL, the Miami Dolphins. Long backstory there, and shorter backstory to the Lakers, but yeah, that's my NBA team. Sorry, fans.
With some weird love for like the Bucks and
Bucks. So yeah, if you want to go to like so I've always had like the Bucks have been sort of a team that I've, or maybe just Giannis specifically, but that's been like kind of a as an NBA, the NBA nerd in me likes rooting for them. They've I've sort of used to be my NL team for baseball. It used to be the Houston Astros, and then they were moved to the AL, which is a very weird thing to happen when you have your NL team switches divisions and now is in the same I guess league as your AL team. But yeah, so that's made that kind of weird. But the Astros were the first baseball game I went to, so I kind of always have had a fond spot in my heart for them.
Yeah, it's very like Adam Sandler all over the place love of teams from different cities.
Hey, at least it's not like Cowboys, Yankees. I mean, you could throw Lakers in there, but all like the major four, like traditional teams.
Definitely.
It could be worse.
So, Nick, anything else you want to close the episode out with?
I would just say that I wish I could have enjoyed the Celtics loss to the Bucks more if my own team wasn't absolutely self-immolating and making terrible decisions and having fans protest outside their stadiums. I don't know how Frank Vogel is going to be as a head coach, but I feel like it would have been nice to have Tyronn Lue. I don't know. It seems like we have the best player in the league, and we're kind of wasting it right now. So if the Celtics fans have anything, they have that the Lakers are a big dumpster fire right now.
Yeah, we're more of a trash can fire while the Lakers are a full-blown dumpster fire. I guess we do have that to look forward to. So, Nick, that's about it for the episode. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.